Welcome to episode 39 of the Mile 62 podcast. I'm your host, Richard Elkins, coming to you from Austin, Texas. It's been about a month since my last podcast and a lot going on. I just completed my third race of the year. So I've been busy. I've been trying to do an ultra every month. I guess it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, we had this ice age in Texas that was pretty rough. We were blessed. The temperature got down to about zero, and we lost power about an hour, and then we had power for about an hour, and then we lose it for 3 hours. It was kind of a rolling blackout for a couple of days, and then eventually we lost water because the water pumping facilities need electricity to pump water. But we were pretty blessed because a lot of people in the Austin area lost their power for the whole week. So it was pretty rough. I mean, at one point, we had plenty of water and food, and we live in a new neighborhood, so we had a little bit better than others. We were melting snow and ice in big pots just so we could run the toilets. So it was a pretty extreme situation. I think it was the coldest it had been in 75 years. You know, usually we have one or two days, a couple days a year in Texas with cold weather, but it's never been that cold for 1 week. So I guess it's kind of like in Chicago when they have a heat wave for a week. You know, their infrastructure is not set up for the extreme temperatures, and neither is ours on the cold side. But I made it through it. I did a lot of training in my gym. My gym is pretty complete now. There's garage is pretty full. I've got, you know, all my weight equipment. I got a new ski ERG piece of equipment. Some people call it a ski erg. It's basically a Nordic skiing machine built by Concept 2. You know, Concept 2 is very famous for rowing machines, but they also have a Nordic skier and a bike. The Nordic skier I got really interested in because they use them in CrossFit competitions. So it's a great upper body workout. I thought about getting a rowing machine. I had a Concept rowing machine a long time ago, but I really wanted something different. And I'm interested in maybe doing some form of CrossFit competition in the future, just to kind of mix it up some. And the Nordic ski stroke is something that it would be very good for developing my strength for using my poles, because often probably the last 20 miles of 100 mile events, I usually use my poles. And in the future, I'd like to do, you know, some higher elevation mountain events like in Europe, such as UTMB, and maybe some Colorado events. So I think it will help me out a lot. And I'm able to basically do it every day. I usually run in the mornings, and then I'll ski at night. And I've seen some benefit. I've been doing it for a few weeks, and I'm getting stronger. And I know because of the drag on the machine, I can tell that I'm getting better. So I'm excited about having this new Nordic skiing machine. I was on the waiting list for a couple months, and I finally got it in. And, you know, the trail runners in Europe during the winter season, they do ski-mo and Nordic skiing, and it helps them a lot. So that's kind of my thought pattern on getting the machine. Then about 2 weeks ago, I got a Rogue Echo bike. That is one of the key pieces of equipment in some of the CrossFit competitions. It's not a normal bike. Basically using your arms. Some people call it an assault bike because there's another brand called Assault. And then also Schwinn makes this kind of bike also. But after reviewing many reviews online, I decided to go with the Rogue Echo bike, and I'm glad I did. It's really strong, very well built, and boy, it really works you out. You know, I can run for hours and hours and do these ultras all the time, but doing 1 mile on a Rogue Echo bike is really an extreme workout. Typically, I will do like 3 or 4 times 1 mile. And in the CrossFit competitions, they actually measure it by calories. I always thought that was kind of silly, but now I understand why. You know, they'll go and say, okay, for this station, you need to do 25 calories on the bike. Well, my Rogue bike measures by calories, and sure enough, 20 to 25 calories is about 1 mile. So that makes sense. But I always thought it was interesting that they measure the station by calories, not by distance or time. But that's my Rogue Echo bike. Great piece of equipment, really tough on me, which is what I need. It's got a fan blade wheel and basically shoots a throat, blows a lot of air on you when you're really pushing it. It's a pretty neat piece of equipment. It's not real expensive either. But the title of this podcast is the J&J Trail Run. I just finished last weekend. I was in the J&J 101 miler, and that's what I registered for. J&J Trail Race is north of San Antonio, about one. It's 1 hour west of Kerrville. It's where they've had one Bandera 100K race, and the J&J Trail Race has been going on for many years out there. It's been a national race competition a couple times, so it's pretty famous facility for putting on trail races. In my opinion, it's the toughest course in Texas in regards to trail racing. There's a lot of elevation. It's a typical rock garden in central Texas, so it's a lot like the Bandera course, but a little bit more difficult. Tejas Trails changed up the course a little bit this year. They made it a clover leaf design, where the main aid station at the main facility, you would go into every loop, and the loops were small loops. So the first loop was a 6 mile loop. So you take off, you go out up into the hills, you come back, you go through the main aid station, then you go out for a 4 mile loop, then come back, and then you go out for the last loop, which was 11 miles. The 11 mile loop was a really tough one because there were some really large hills out on that loop, and really worked you over. Well, I started the race feeling pretty good. I've been training a lot. Not a lot of running miles because of the winter weather and stuff, but I've been training in my gym. I felt good. I had no excuse not to finish. But I got through about 2.5 complete loops, which was about 50 miles. And I just that last from 40 to 50 miles, started feeling a little bit weak. But what really got me was chafing. I've struggled with what shorts to wear during the last year. And I started wearing compression shorts, which I like a lot. I was wearing low compression shorts, low rise, and during my 100 mile in February, they started slipping on me a little bit. So I was having to pull them up towards the end of the race, and I think it was because I was using a lot of lube, you know, in the buttocks area and stuff. I got the suggestion that I need to use my high rise. Well, I have high rise shorts. So in this race, I went and used my high rise shorts, but what I wasn't thinking about was I used my mid compression or high compression shorts. I've never had an issue with those shorts, and but thinking after the race, I've never used them that long of competition in high heat. It was extremely hot. We were sweating a lot, losing a lot of salt, so salt was getting into the shorts. Anyways, I got extremely badly chafed in the buttocks area, you know, butt crack area, and below my buttocks on my legs, where the shorts were bunching up, maybe with a lot of salt. I was using a lot of lube and you know, different products. I mainly use squirrel's nut butter, but I've also used trail toes as well. And it wasn't a lube issue. It's just what I call it, the science of butt crack chafing. It's really a troublesome area for ultra runners. And for me, I'm probably about 20% body fat, so my buttocks have a little bit of extra fat. And I really think what happened was, because I used the higher compression shorts, my buttocks were pushed together, and there was basically no clearance. So I just made it easier to get chafed. And thinking back in the previous years, the shorts that I wore and stuff were a lot looser. I really like the compression shorts. It's nothing about the product. I think they're a great product, but you got to use the right compression, the right rise for the right race. Does that make sense? I like compression shorts because on your legs, they're like a second skin, and you can run them all the way down. I've got different lengths all the way down to my ankles. So when you're running Texas races, they have a lot of brush and thorns, and I got big legs, you know, sometimes I'll brush my legs, calves and legs, thighs together, I get chafed there. So compression shorts will protect you against chafing on the legs, but if you wear too high of compression on the buttocks, can cause extra problems, can cause extra chafing in that area. And that's what I've learned by trial and error. So my suggestion is races that, I shouldn't say distance, because, you know, a pro can finish, 50 miles in, 6-7 hours or less. It's going to take me 12 to 15 hours. So if you're racing over 10 hours in high heat, I suggest not use high compression shorts, because it's gonna cause extra compression. It's a little bit different in the wintertime. I wore compression shorts last fall in the cold and didn't have any issue. Those were low compression shorts. So keep that in mind. So you want your buttocks to be loose, you know, the clearance, you know, your butt crack clearance, as I say, started being so descriptive, but I think it's really critical for ultra runners, and you need to have used lube, you know, on a regular basis through the race. You know, you start feeling it, something wrong, you got to lube up, and try not to keep wear shorts that are too tight. This is critical because, you know, like in my situation at 50 miles, I felt okay, and it really pissed me off because, you know. And it turns out that the person that won the 100-miler won it in 25 hours. You know, I'm a 26-hour runner on 100 miles. You know, I could have been top five easily, but the chafing took me out of the race. Because the thing about chafing is, you know, if you chafe on your leg or on your feet or something, I've got all kinds of medical supplies, KT tape and stuff you can tape up. But if you lose all the skin in your butt crack, what are you going to do, tape it up? Funny thing is, I did think about that, but you can't. And you can't, if you put lube in there or whatever, it's still going to hurt really bad. So, I mean, I was reduced to a walk and then, or a slow hike. And I figured I still have another 50 miles to finish this race. There's no way I could have done it. And I knew I had another race in a couple weeks. So I said, well, I'm just going to prevent from injuring myself further, and I pulled out of the race, which I hate to do because I very, very rarely DNF. I haven't DNF'd in probably a year and a half, 2 years. So I pulling out of races, I don't take lightly. Usually I'll suffer through the pain, but I really wanted to share this with you because I've really struggled with shorts and lube combinations, but I've come to the conclusion that you want to have your buttocks loose. And almost like a roadrunner shorts, loose, and you know, compression on the legs is good because it's going to protect your skins from chafing. But you need to have the right balance. And if you have any other ideas how to solve this issue, please send me a message or an email, you know, or DM me on Instagram. It's runnerrwe at runnerrwe or runnerrwe@gmail.com. Love to hear from you because this is an area that a lot of people suffer with, you know, in the really long races, especially the hot races like in Texas. I remember at Habanero last year, last year it was canceled, but the year before, I mean, there were people coming in, the medic told my brother that, you know, people were asking them to tape up their balls. I mean, that's pretty rough, you know. So chafing in a high heat race will take you out very quickly, and it takes out the best of runners. So having the right clothing combination and the correct lubrication is critical. One or the other won't solve the problem. So that's what I'm trying to tell you. I don't care what lube you use. If you wear the wrong clothes, something too tight, too much compression, you're going to run into problems. And especially for mid and back of the pack runners, because we typically are not like 10% body fat. you know, I'm 20%, you know, you get a little fat on your butt cheeks, that's prime for chafing. Anyways, enough about chafing, but that took me out of the race. And also one thing about the last year, I think, races, you know, the aid station food hasn't been so good. I'm one of these big pushers of no pacers, no crew. I've never used pacers, never used crew. And I really suffered a little bit because the aid station's food, I don't know, I feel sorry for the race directors. Maybe they're not making as much money, but I mean, like the last race, it was only peanut butter and jelly. And you try to eat peanut butter and jelly for 10 hours. I mean, I had my goo chews and stuff that I brought with me. But what I'm getting at is bring your own food to the race. Maybe when things, COVID goes away and the race counts go up again, they'll start spending more on the aid station food. But and I think aid station help has been hard to get as well. I mean, sure enough, as soon as I get my vaccine, I'm going to volunteer. I know they got it pretty rough. I'm taking some of my own food to keep in one of my drop bags. I'm talking about sandwiches and stuff like that, because it doesn't matter which race director it is. I mean, both of them in Texas, you know, the aid station quality of food has gone down. You know, they're cooking stuff, putting it in bags and doing whatever they can to get around the rules, you know, follow the rules, not get around the rules. But bottom line is, man, it's tough if you don't use crews right now, because I mean, I think crews and using crews and pacers, in my mind, I like to do it alone. In my mind, it's kind of like cheating. So especially in regards to pacers, I think you should do it on your own. But I know I'm a minority in that area of opinion, but that's just the way I feel. But aid station food has really gone down, so make sure you bring some of your own stuff to races. Hopefully things will get better once COVID goes away. But overall, J&J was a great trail race. Tejas Trails does a good job putting it on. It's such a great venue. I highly recommend it. They put it on every year. I just would say the 101 miler is quite a challenge. 2 weeks before that, I did the David Goggins challenge. First time I ever did it. That's the 4x4 by 48 hours. What that means is you must run 4 miles every 4 hours for 48 hours. So it's like 12 or 13 workouts. One question I'd have for David Goggins is it 13 or 12? Because when you get 44 hours, you run 4 hours. Does that mean you run another 4 miles at 48 hours? I don't know. I made it through 12 workouts. I got to a point where it was just really tough on me. And it's not that, what's interesting about the workout is, and I think David knows this, is the reason he's designed it this way. It's not the mileage or the sleep deprivation that gets you, it's the spacing of the workouts. Because what happens is, it takes you about 1 hour to run 4 miles, or a little bit less, depending on 35, 40 minutes, depending on how fast you run. But let's say it takes you 1 hour, if you're taking it really easy. Then you've got 3 hours to the next workout. What happens is the body starts trying to recover. And as soon as it gets in that recovery mode, which I think is a different mode in your body, it gets crashed again with another workout. Whereas when we're running ultras or long events, marathon plus, whatever, the body stays in that mode. It stays in running survival mode. But when it goes into recovery mode and you crash it with another 4 mile workout, after 3 or 4 of these workouts, boy, I felt a feeling that I never felt before. I mean, my body really didn't feel very well. So I made it through about 12 workouts and then I decided to pull the plug. I just didn't want to injure myself because I had 1 weekend after that rest and then I had the 100 miler. But it's tough, and I also find it kind of difficult. I did it on a Friday and Saturday. And, you know, running through your neighborhood, I live in like a, you know, typical neighborhood with a lot of houses and stuff. You're running through your neighborhood at 2 a.m. with a headlamp. People think, you know, it's just a weird feeling. Maybe they don't think too much about you, but for me, you know, I remember one night I was running past the elementary school not far from my house and the sheriff was there. It was like 3 a.m. and I have a headlamp on running down the road. You know, I'm just wondering, what is he thinking? Is this guy a criminal or is he just crazy? Or is, you know, But a lot of the sheriffs that come through here, they always see me running during the day and stuff. So I think they probably knew who I was. But he didn't drive over and talk to me or anything. But it's just kind of weird when you think about it. You know, you're running through your neighborhood. It's 3 a.m. You got a headlamp on, and you run across the police in your neighborhood. You know, there's no crime in my neighborhood. Every once in a while there is, but you know, you got to be wondering, what are the neighbors thinking? What does the police think about you running 3 a.m, especially on the weekend? You know, if it's 5 or 4 a.m, there are people that get up and run that. But when you're 2, 3 a.m. running through your neighborhood, you know, you start to think about what people might think about you. Maybe I shouldn't, but it was kind of a weird situation when I ran past the sheriff. But anyways, the David Goggins workout is pretty tough, and I suggest everyone try it out sometime. But keep in mind, it's that spacing of the workouts that's going to get you. It's pretty tough. I've been trying out some new shoes. I've got the Temp 2.0s. You know, I'm a big ultra. I use only ultra on the trails, and the reason is I like the 4 foot and the gaiter system. I've said that before, and been using them for years on the trails, and I've been real honest. I don't like their road shoes, even their new ones, the Torin and stuff. Tried them, sent them back. They just don't do it for me. I like their Escalante, but I use that for like on the track or something. But in regards to Ultra, the ones I use on the road are really the Olympus 4. I think that's their best road shoe, and it's actually a trail shoe. Once my Olympus get past to like 200 miles racing, I use them on the road. And it's a good road shoe, but it's a heavy road shoe. You know, like Seth DeMore says, he doesn't like the Olympus at all. He says it's too heavy, gave it a bad rating. But I love the Olympus 4 for the trails. I recently got some Temp 2.0s. They were on sale at REI, and very pleasantly pleased. I used to wear one of my first trail shoes was the original Temp, and I loved them. The gray ones, that the upper felt almost like a nylon or plastic. I just loved that shoe. It was a perfect shoe. And then they tried to fix something that was broken. The next version I didn't like at all. It was not much different than the Lone Peak. It was, you know, used to be the Temp was like an in-between cushion-wise. That second version of the Temp was closer to the Lone Peak, in my opinion. And I took it in a 69-mile race, and about most of the race, it was a hot, sweaty race, but almost the whole race, the shoe was squeaking on me. So I stopped wearing Temps for about a year. I mean, I wear them for short runs around here, you know, 10K or whatever, but I very seldom would wear a Temp. Well, they went on sale recently, the Temp 2.0s. I got some, and boy, they're a great shoe. Feel really good, and no squeaking. Anyways, I've been playing around with them some. I also got the, I think it's the RSW. It's the rain, sleet, bad weather shoe. That's a Lone Peak version. I've run in them a couple times. I bought those for the Huntsville race, the Rocky Raccoon 100 that I ran in February, but it never really started raining, and we were supposed to have raining at the J&J, and it never really sprinkled, but it never really got into raining, so I've never used my harsh weather shoes, the Lone Peaks, but got two new types of Ultras that I've been trying over the last month, and then most exciting thing I got is the Hoka Mach 4. Boy, that's a great shoe. I'm going to do a review comparison with that and the Clifton 7. That podcast might drop today or tomorrow. But on the roads, you know, I run in my neighborhood. I typically run a 10K. Like right now, I'm challenging myself to a 10K a day. I'll talk about that again in a minute. But typically, I will run 2 or 3 miles on the road getting to the trails. Run on the trails and run back. So it works out, I think, about 4 miles on the road and 2 miles on the trail. Well, the Cliftons are great for that. And I've been wearing Cliftons since model 4. Now they're on model 7. I bought a pair of Clifton 7s about a month ago. Well, I was watching Seth DeMore's vlog. If you don't watch Seth DeMore on YouTube, I highly suggest you do it. He's great. I really like watching his programs. He has a new video every day. Or he calls them vlogs. Everyone was highly rated. He was highly rated the Mach 4, and everybody was buying them. And I was like, I use Hoka all the time for the roads, and I got a few of their trail shoes, like the Evio Mafate, which is what Jim won Western States in a couple years back. But mostly use their shoes for the road. And never heard of the Mach 4. I got them in, and they've got an extended midsole, kind of like the Clifton Edge. I didn't like the Clifton Edge, but I tried these out, and I've on my third run. I probably got 20 miles in them. Boy, they feel great. They feel a little bit like the Clifton, but they got more room. And my biggest complaint about Hoka over the years is their shoes are a little bit narrow, not enough room for me. Clifton's were all just right. This one's got even a little bit more room, and it's a really comfortable ride, and I really like it a lot. So I've kind of kicked my Clifton 7s to the curb right now. But I highly suggest try out the Hoka Mach 4. What else I got going on? Schedule for the year has changed up a little bit. Like I said, I'm running, well, before I get into my schedule, I've started a 10K a day. This will be my third day. And that may not sound too challenging because a lot of us run a 10K a day, but no rest days, no tapering, no rest days after a ultra. And I'm running an ultra every month. So that's where it's going to become challenging, that week before an ultra and the week after an ultra. Okay, let's talk about my schedule. My schedule's changed a little bit. So like I said, I just finished my third ultra of the year. I have plans to do Hell's Hill 50 miler, which is in the beginning of April. I think it's April 2nd. And then there's Tejas Trail has another ultra later in April. I think it's, I can't remember the name, something about rocks. Anyways, I'm not sure if I'll do another one in April. And then in May, I may run a race, or I may pace someone in a race. I don't use pacers, but I'm happy to pace other people to, you know, spend some time out on the trail and help other people out. And then during the summer, I plan to do the Captain Carl series, which is four races of 60K at night. In May, I may do the Spider Mountain. That's a night race, 12 hours long, where you run up and down a, it's almost like a ski mountain. They even have a lift, but it's for mountain biking in Texas, called Spider Mountain. I've never done that one before. I'm excited to try that one out. Do Captain Crawls during the summer. And then in August, I'm signed up for the Habanero 100 miler. I'm not sure if I'll drop down to the 100K or do the 100 miler. I haven't decided, but I'm registered for the 100 miler. And then in October, I've got the Arkansas Traveler 100 miler. That's a really tough race in Arkansas. I'm really excited because that's a hard race to get into. Actually, me and my brother are in that race. So that's kind of my key race of the year. Also, probably the most difficult race of the year. Habanero 100 miler is pretty difficult as well because of the heat. I've done Habanero. I've run that loop out there 31 times. Because I've done 50K, I've done 100K, and I did the Jalapeno 100 miler. So I know that course very well. I may do the 100 miler in August. I'm not sure yet. And then I'm also registered for Brazos Bend 100 miler in December. So I've got 300 milers and a bunch of smaller races throughout the year. So I'm going to stay busy every month. I'm excited about it. It'll be an exciting season. One thing I want to talk about the chafing again, what I forgot to mention is, one of the legends in ultra running, Dean Karnazes, I read one time during the race through Death Valley, you know, he got so chafed that he took all of his clothes off and he was running down the road with no clothes on. It kind of tells you that, you know, your body being a little free will help you prevent chafing. So you don't want to be too restricted. But I always thought that was kind of a funny story. Have a good week. Enjoy your running. If you have any feedback for me, you can reach me at runnerrwe@gmail.com, or you can DM me on Instagram. That's @runnerrwe. I mainly use Instagram. I only use Facebook for the running group, so if you send me a message on Facebook, I probably won't see it. I don't have Facebook Messenger installed. I really don't like Facebook, to be honest with you, and I only use it because of all the running groups. Ambassador groups use Facebook. One thing about Instagram, I had someone send me a message like, why do you like my picture? I don't know you very well. Actually, I follow only runners on Instagram. I use it for running. The truth is I like everybody's pictures. If you're doing exercising or running, I typically will like your picture. It's just the way I do things. If you're posting food or hugging your dog or something like that, I usually don't. So no meaning behind it. I'm happy and I enjoy fitness and running. If I see other people running and doing fitness, lifting weights, you know, that's why I'm on the social media. I have a lot of focus on Instagram and in business I use LinkedIn, but I don't use any other channels of social media, so I'm able to focus on those and try to do it well. That's the reason I deleted my Twitter and I stopped using Facebook. I want to do a couple of them very well instead of a bunch of them not so well. So that's the end of my background. So anyways, like I said, have a good week. Stay tuned for more podcasts. I'm going to do a shoe review soon on the Mach 4 versus the Clifton 7. Take care. Goodbye.